holding on. I'm Hess Amadeus about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins Achriz. We're holding at the end of that line, Amar of Chana. We said in the Mishnah that Nisinim are also to ever intermarry into the Jewish people. So we said the Nisinim are the descendants of those people, from the Knanim who lived in and around the city of Givon, who in the times of Yeshua, they tricked Yeshua and the rest of the Jewish people into thinking that they were from some faraway country, and they made a peace treaty with them and swore that they'd help them. And then afterwards, when it turned out that they're Knanim, like this, it should have been Loisachayef on the Shama. It would have been normally that, like all the other Knanim, they have to be destroyed. But in this case, because they'd made a Shavua and it would have made a Chilul Hashem to break it, even though it was made under false pretenses, then Yeshua told them that we'll leave you alive, but you have to be chot ve'etz and v'shoy ve'mayim. You have to be wood choppers and water drawers for the Mishkan. So now we're going to discuss later on, and we're going to discuss later on in the Gemara. Tosfos discusses. Good morning, Aaron. And the Gemara discusses. Tosfos discusses where exactly does the Isser on them come from? Is it Daraisa or is it Darabanan? So we'll get back to that point later. But anyway, the Mishnah had said they're also to ever intermarry into the Jewish people. So now let's talk about that story. Omer of Chana Barada, Nisinim David Gozer Aleha. That David made the Gzera that Nisinim should not intermarry into the Jewish people. So we'll have further on, we'll talk about Moshe, and there's a certain stage of it from Moshe's times and from Yeshua's times and from David's times. Later on, where we'll talk about, Tosfos discusses certain ins and outs of it. Are we talking about the Isser, that he made the Isser of marriage on them, or is that Isser already Minat Torah, and we're just talking about some other Gzera? Anyway, why did David make a Gzera on them that they can never join the Jewish people? So the reason is, first of all, Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayikra Melech Givonim, Vayemer Aleihem, the king had called the Givonim, and he said to them, what he said to them we're going to talk about in a minute, and the Pasuk interjects, Vagivonim loy b'nei Yisrael, heim v'gomer, the Givonim are not from b'nei Yisrael. So we're understanding that the reason that what the Pasuk is telling us, the Givonim are not fit to enter into the Jewish people, they don't deserve to become part of the Jewish people, for reasons that we're going to see in this story. Now, what happened? My time of Gozer Alayhu. So why did he make Gzera? So like this. The background is like this. Tichtiv. By he, Rav, we made David Shalosh Shonim Shona Acha Shona. During David's times, this is at the end of David's, life, when he was king, he'd already been king for 30 odd years. There was a famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years, year after year. So there's a famine. The first thing you need to do is find out why Hashem brought a famine. Find out what Averis might be causing it. So Shonu Rishona Omavahem. So during the first year, he tells the Jewish people, Shema Ovd Averis Kechavim Yeshbachem. Maybe there are people among you, among the Jewish people, who are worshipping Averis Zara. And that's causing it. Echtiv, after all, we say every day in Shema. Va'avadtem alakim acherim v'ishtech v'isamahem. That if you worship other gods and bow down to them, va'otza asashamayim v'lo yiyem otza v'gremer, then Hashem will stop up the heavens and there won't be rain. So they spent that entire year, they searched around all of Eretz Yisrael, and they found nothing like that. Nobody was worshipping Avodah Zarah. During the second year, the famine is still going on. So David said, and we can understand, by the way, during that first year, it meant, obviously, you know, he's not just telling them once. He's standing up telling them speeches over and over again about how bad Avodah Zarah is and how serious it is, and to make sure to remove any trace of it, and meanwhile sending around soldiers and police to check whether, in fact, there is any. And they didn't find any. So that wasn't the problem. Shnia Amalahem, during the second year, David says to them, the famine's still going on, Shema Ovid Avera Yeshbachem. Or there may be among you people who are doing Avera, where Avera, unspecified in the Gemara, means Znus. So, and that can also cause a lack of rainfall. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, by Yimonu Revivim, the showers of rain have been held back, Umalkosh Loihoya, and there was no Malkosh, which we learned back in Septimus, is the late rain that comes late during the season, Nissan time. Umetzach Isha Zona, Hoyavach, the Gomer, and you had the forehead of an Isha Zona. So in context, the Pasuk, the Navi, is telling the Jewish people that despite the fact there hasn't been rain, you're being stubborn and you're not doing tshuva, like the way that an Isha Zona would be brazen and stubborn and saying, I'm not doing anything wrong, but the Gemara is understanding, in other words, that there's a connection between Znus and a lack of rain. So is there any of that? He's asking them. Again, Bot Gavulei Motzer, during that entire year, he's telling them about it, and they're checking throughout the land, and they didn't find it. Shlishis, in the third year, on the land, Shema Poskit Tzedakah Barnabim, Yeshbachem, Vein Nosin. Are there maybe among you people who announced in public that they're going to give Tzedakah, like by a Mishaberach or something, and didn't give? And that can also cause the rain to be stopped. The pasuk says there's clouds and there's wind, but there's no rain. Ish mishalal the matas shocker, a person who prides himself on a false gift. So in Pashut of Pshat, the pasuk is telling us the same. It's telling us a mashal and a nimshal. The same way as you're so disappointed when there's wind and clouds, but then there's no rain. The same way it is when a person prides himself on giving a gift, and then he doesn't actually give it. But the Gemara rather is understanding, and we learned this in Tainus as well, that it means that there's actually a cause and effect relationship here. When there's ish mishalo b'matas shaker, then that causes the rain to stop because of that avera. Which, by the way, Rashi mentions in Tainus, it doesn't mean only Barabim. We're mentioning Barabim because usually that's how people do it. A person will make, you know, there'll be an appeal, Barabim, and a person will get up and say, I pledge X amount, and then he doesn't actually follow through with it. But the same way would be to a certain extent in private as well. Anyway, so is there anything of that? Bod Gavulei Motzer, again, they searched throughout Eretz Yisrael and they didn't find. Which shows you, by the way, you see so far from the story what a high level the Jewish people were on, not a trace of any of these problems. Anyway, so the famine is still going on. Omar said, David says to himself, in that case, Ein Adavar Tolu Elabi, then it depends only on me. It's not something that the Jewish people are doing in Avera, so therefore it must be something having to do with the kingship. By the way, Marashal says, how do we get this whole part of the story that we're saying that for 3 years, every year they're checking for a different Avera? He says, that's why the Pasuk makes a point of saying Shona Achar Shona. Once it says that the famine was for 3 years, why do you have to add that it was year after year? That's what it means. Every year was a different kind of thing that they were searching for a different Avera, and they didn't find it. So David is saying to himself now, in that case, it depends only on me. It must be something that has to do with the Malchus. Miyad by Yivakesh David is Pnei Hashem. So therefore, the pasuk continues that David looked, or that David searched for, sought for the face of Hashem. What does that mean? Ma'ihi Amar Reish Lakish Hashal BeUrim BeTumim. At that point, he asked the Urim BeTumim, "What's going on over here?" Now, the point is, Marashah says, up until this point, if it didn't have to do with the king, then he can't necessarily ask the Urim BeTumim. It has to be something that affects the whole nation, and if there's possible averus first, then he has to deal with those first. But once he found there's no averus that could cause a lack of rainfall, that could cause a drought, then he, as the king, is entitled to ask the Urim BeTumim. So that's what he did. My mashma, where do you see from the word pnei Hashem that it means the Urim BeTumim? Amar Rav Elazar, asya pnei, because we have a zera shava on the word pnei. Ksivacha vayvakesh David is pnei Hashem. Ochtivasim v'shalav v'mishpat ha'urim lifnei Hashem. In Parashas Pinchas, Hashem tells Moshe that Yeshua is going to stand in front of Elazar and ask him for the judgment of the Urim, for the judgment of the Urim V'Tumim, lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. So we see that asking for Pnei Hashem means asking the Urim V'Tumim. Well, the answer came back. The pasuk continues, Vayomer Hashem el Shaul v'el Beis Adomim. It's because of Shaul and because of the bloody house, his family, in other words, Ala Shehemis HaGivonim. Because he killed the Givonim. So what does this mean? It's saying two things. El Shaul, number one, it's saying because of Shaul, something was done wrong regarding Shaul. Shaloi nisfad kahalacha. He was never mourned. They never made a hesped for him properly. So at the end of Shmuel Aleph, it tells how Shaul and his sons went to war against the Plishtim on Har Gilboa. They were all killed over there. Shaul and three of his sons and many of the Jews were killed over there. The Plishtim, then, the pasuk goes on to talk about, they took the bodies of Shaul and his sons and hung them up on the walls of Beis Shaan as a trophy, because at that point they controlled the city and they wanted to show, look, we finally got rid of our enemy. Yidden from the city of Yavish Gilad across the Yaudin, sneaked across the Yaudin and went on Mesiras Nefesh and recovered the bodies. But they didn't, for whatever reason, maybe because of fear, I guess because of fear of the Plishtim, they didn't actually make a whole a whole elaborate funeral for him, that the whole Eretz Yisrael should, that all the Yidden from all over Eretz Yisrael should participate. Instead, they just buried him there in Yavish, in Yavish Gilad. So, okay, the Pasuk says they cried and they fasted and whatever, but they didn't make a proper hesped as they should for a king of the whole Jewish people. In fact, actually, there was an explanation that at the beginning of Shmuel Beis, it says when David found out the news and he made a whole kina, he said a whole long poem over there about 10 psukim, bewailing the loss to the Jewish people of Shoal and of Yonison. But the Jewish people in general, usually, you know, the Maratz Chayes explains that usually when a king passes away, they had a standard hesped that they begin with, and they didn't do that, and they didn't do that as befits Shoal's honor. So now Hashem is holding that against the Jewish people. Now, this is many years later. This is almost 30 years later, but still, all along, that's been up in the air. So that's El Shoal. And El Beis Adomim, what's the second part? El Beis Adomim, Ala Shahemis HaGivonim, because we're saying that he killed Givonim. So now, but Shehefen Latsinim Shoal Shahemis HaGivonim, where do we ever find that Shoal killed the Givonim? Elam Itoch Shahorag Noiv Irakonim, because he wiped out the city of Noiv, which was the city of Kohanim. That was the city where the Mishkan was located at the time. So everybody who lived in the city were Kohanim or was somehow connected with the Mishkan. So you have the whole story earlier in Sefer Shmuel, where David at one point had gone over there, and Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, had given him food and a sword and so forth. This is after David, this was when David was on the run from Shoal. This is after the story that's an Aftarah of Mocha Chodesh, where Yonasan told him, your life is in danger, you've got to run away. So he ran off to Noiv, and he was starving over there, and Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, helped him out. Akitzur Doig used that to twist things. He was a Baal Lashon Hara, unfortunately, and he twisted it into claiming that Achimelech and the rest of the Kohenim over there and David are actually in cahoots. So Shoal ordered that the whole city be wiped out, and Doeg ended up doing that. So Mitoch Shehemet Shaholag Noiv Ira Kohenim, because Shoal had Noiv, the city of the Kohenim, wiped out, Shoim Aspikin Lahem Mayim Umozin, now they used to supply the food and water to the Givonim. So now, when the Kohenim of Noiv are wiped out, it means that the Givonim, they lost their panosa, they lost their livelihood. Mala Olam HaKosuk Kila Horgan, the Posit counts it as though he killed them. Now, Marsha says one second, what do you mean, Rashi, that the Kohenim gave them food and water? On the contrary, the Givonim are the ones drawing the water. So he actually explains the other way around, that it means that the Givonim were providing food and water for the Kohenim of Noiv, and now it's not that they lost their Parnosa, it's that they lost that Schus. And now, all those years later, the fact that they lost that Schus still rankled by them. And therefore, that's why now Hashem is standing up on their behalf.
You mean they weren't using that as commerce to make money?
So in other words, according to that, it would be they weren't necessarily using it to make money. What they wanted was the Schus, yeah. With that said, though, Rashi on the pasuk brings from Yerushalmi that it's not just that they lost their livelihood. The Yerushalmi also brings that in addition, 7 Givonim were actually killed in the crossfire. And the Yerushalmi lists there were 2 Choit Ve'etzim, 2 Shoyer Ve'mayim, and a Shamash, and a Chazan, and a Sofer. Apparently, by the way, you know, we were talking about yesterday about how Yeshua had said the Givonim are going to be Choit Ve'etzim, Shoyer Ve'mayim, and the question was brought up, I mean, how do you force an entire nation to be that? Apparently, you see from that Rashi and from that Yerushalmi that it wasn't necessarily. The point is, there would always be among the Givonim Choit Ve'etzim. In the Shoyer V'mayim. Some of them could fill other jobs that were needed for the Mishkan as well. Anyway, the point is, so now that's what the Pasuk is saying, that Hashem holds those two things against the Jewish people. So Gemara says, isn't it contradictory? Kartava al Shol Shla Nisbar Ka'alocha, but Kartava ala Shehemis HaGivonim. We're saying, on the one hand, Shol was not eulogized the way he should be. In other words, that Hashem is standing up for Shol's honor. And on the other hand, at the same time, Hashem is also criticizing him, that he caused the Givonim to be killed. And that therefore his family has to be punished for it. What does one have to do with the other? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. Da'amar Shlokish, my dichtiv, what does it mean in the Pasuk? Bakshu es Hashem kol anvei oretz. All of you humble people of the world, seek Hashem. Hashem ishpatot po'olu. with his judgment, they accomplished. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk means something like, all of you who accomplished Hashem's justice in the world, all of you seek Hashem, and in other words, Hashem is accessible to you in tefillah. But we're darshaning, Hashem shpatei sham pa'alu. It means where Hashem's justice is, there you have the person's mention of the person's deeds. So yes, when Hashem is bringing up, when there's a kitur of Lamaila about Shaul, that he did wrong by wiping out Noiv Erachayim, at the same time, the good things that he did are mentioned also in Shemayim in his favor, and that includes the fact that now there's still this open thing that they hadn't mourned for him properly when he was killed. Marsha points out the reason why the Gemara darshins it that way is because if it was all referring to Hashem's justice, then it would be Hashem mishpat fa'alu, that the people did Hashem's mishpat. Mishpat toy means, in other words, we mean his justice as in the justice of the person. When the person is being judged, at the same time, fa'alu, what he accomplished, the good that he accomplished in the world, is also being mentioned. So therefore,
how exactly did he die?
So he didn't die. I told you the Plishtim killed him and his sons in battle.
They were battling the Plishtim at Harugabaya. And he lost his chus because of the...
He had lost his chus for several reasons. Altogether, the Medrash mentions five things that he had done wrong. Yeah. There's a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that mentions a couple of them, and then the Medrash expands a couple more. Yeah. By the way, an interesting thing is none of the five are, for example, the Noiv Erachayim, the fact that he went to the Eishes Baal HaSoiv, a couple of other things. Interestingly, the fact that he pursued David is not on the list. Because when you think about it, why was he pursuing David? Because he genuinely thought that David is a danger to him and to the kingship. So he was terribly misguided about that, but nevertheless, we can't hold that against him. Yeah. Anyway, let's continue the Gemara. Omar David. Okay, so David figures like this. Okay, of those two things, Shaul, as far as making a hesped for Shaul, Nafulu Treso Yavre Shata, 12 months have already passed. Now, not just 12 months, by this time Rashi says it was well over 30 years. But we're mentioning 12 months because that's usually the amount of time within which you make a spadim for a person. But like doubt in the midst today, so it's not the normal thing to make a hesped for him. If you start making a hesped now for Shaul, 30 years later, it's just going to look odd. So there's really nothing we can do about that at this point, David figures. It's not the covered dick for him. But Nisinim, as far as the fact that he harmed the Nisinim, directly or indirectly, okay, Mikrinu v'nefaisinu. So Nisinim, Nikrinu v'nefaisinu. Okay, so let's call in the Nisinim and let's appease them. Let's see what they want, in order to not be angry at Shaul anymore. So therefore the pasuk says, Vayikra melech ha-givonim. So the king David called the Givonim by Yemer Aleim, and he says to them, Mo es alachem, what can I do for you over Moachaber? How can I atone for what was done wrong to you? Uvorchu es nachlas Hashem, and that way you will bless the heritage of Hashem, meaning the Jewish people. So in other words, he's telling them like this, you among yourselves are cursing out Shaul and the Jewish people for treating you badly. What can we do to make it up to you? Well, by Yemer Aleim Givonim, the next passage continues, the Givonim say to him, listen, we have no claims for gold and silver against Shaul and his family. And it's not like we want anybody else from the rest of the Jewish people to be killed. So David says, okay, so what do you want? So they say, let there be given to us seven men from Shaul's descendants, and we will hang them in honor of Hashem. So in other words, they want, so they're saying, we were harmed, that our according to Rashi, that our panosa was taken away, according to Marsha, that our schus was taken away, and according to the Yerushalmi, that seven of us were killed. Therefore, we want lives instead of lives. We want seven of Shaul's descendants, that we should be able to kill them, and then we'll forgive them.
This whole thing is so odd because the punishment that they got with the rain and all that came because of Shaul. Shaul is the one here. One of the things I was telling him is angry is that they didn't lose a given right respect. And meanwhile, he's the one who caused the.
That's what the Gemara was just saying. Hashem Shvatei Palu. That's what the Gemara was just saying. When there's a kitur of Gemayla about what Shaul did wrong, at the same time, Hashem is also standing up for Shaul's honor because, after all, he was basically a tzaddik and he deserved the honor that he should have gotten. So that's exactly it. That's why these two things are going together. So the Givonim, in other words, are saying that we won't accept anything else other than lives. Um, but by the Mephias, Veloy Paisinu. So David tried to talk them out of that. So, you know, what are you going to gain from that? And nothing. They wouldn't be appeased. The only thing we're going to accept is the lives of seven of Shaul's descendants. In fact, Rashi brings on the Pasuk over there from the same Yerushalmi that points out there's a Kriuk Siv in the Pasuk over there. When it starts by saying, we quote the Pasuk over here, Ein Lonu Kesef Bezavim Shaul. So David thinks to himself like this. They're all saying, we don't want any gold and silver, we want lives. You know what David thinks to himself? You know what it probably is? There probably are individuals among the Gevonim who are willing to accept something else short of lives, but they're embarrassed to speak up in public. So therefore, there's a kriyuk siv in the pasuk. We read it lonu, but there's actually it's written in the pasuk li, ein li kesef bezahav, which means that David went individually to each one of the Gevonim to talk to him privately. Maybe, you know, folks, do you need to dafka demand lives? Maybe you'll be willing to accept a monetary payment instead. And nope, not a single one of them. Ein lonu, collectively and individually, they're all saying we won't accept anything else, only the lives of Shaul's descendants. So, Omar, so David says to himself, well, shloshe simonim yesh ba'umazu, we know that there are three simonim that mark the Jewish people, harachmonim by bashanim v'goyim lechsadim, that the Jewish people are naturally rachmonim, kind, and bashanim, and they have a sense of shame, and goyim lechsadim, that they do kindness for other people, and rachmonim actually is merciful, and here we see that the givonim are not, they're cruel people, and the Gemara interjects where we see these three simonim. The pasuk says Hashem will give you rachmim and He will have rachmanos on you and make and increase you. So we see that Hashem gives you the quality of rachmim. By shonim yichtiv ba'avurti yirase al pneichem. We see after Matan Torah, Hashem says that Moshe tells them actually that the purpose of Matan Torah, one of the purposes, was in order that Hashem's fear should be on your faces. So therefore, in other words, a yid has a sense of shame, even when he's done wrong, he's embarrassed about it afterwards. And goyim lechsodim yichtiv lamana she yitzaveh as bonavest basically. We find that Avraham Avinu, it says that he'll command his children and his descendants after him. And the pasuk continues that they're going to, among other things, that they're going to do gemilas chasadim. So therefore, so we see that those are the three defining traits of the Jewish people. We know the Alter Rebbe mentions at the end of Perek Aleph of Tanya that those are not even part of the nefesh HaLekis. Those are actually part of the yid nefesh HaBahamas. So David says to himself, Kol sheyesh bo shloshe simonim alolu, anybody who has these three simonim royally David ba'umazu, he deserves to enter and join together the Jewish people. But these givonim who are showing that they have no rachamim, that they're saying even 30 years later, then they're saying we want descendants of Shaul, where at least on the level that the Gemara is dealing with over here, they weren't necessarily involved in this whole affair. So Stam, they're being achzoristic and demanding lives when it's not going to bring back the lives of the people that they killed, and it's certainly not going to bring back the parnoso or the schosen that they lost. So what are they doing? And it shows that they're cruel people. So therefore, that's when we said at the beginning of the story, we said that David gozer aleihem, when the pasuk says that givonim loivim neisra aleima, that's what it means, that David announced, fine, I'm going to have no choice, I have to do what the givonim are saying, because otherwise the famine is going to continue. But from now on, there's a rule that the Givonim are never allowed to join the Jewish people because of this. So the pasuk continues. So what did David do? So David took the two sons of Rizpa Vasaya, whom she had born to Shaul. Rizpa Vasaya was a Pelegish of Shaul. So she had two sons. That's Armoni Ves Mishiboshes. So the two of them, as well as the five sons of Michal Vashol, whom she had born to Adriel Ben Barzillai from Mechola. So those were the seven. Those were the seven that were picked, that they were the ones who are going to be killed by the Givonim. By the way, I mean you have details in this who these seven are. Tosfos discusses that the Mephibosheth over here. Now there are two Mephibosheths. There's the Pasuk is
the one that came up later.
So one second. So the Pasuk is going to, so we're going to quote in a minute that the Pasuk says that there was a Mephibosheth ben Yonasan, the son of David's friend Yonasan, he was spared. So therefore, obviously, this Mephibosheth is a different one. This is an uncle, a son of Shaul, from Rizpah Vasaya. Tosfos points. But Tosfos discusses that we have Gemara in Brachas that says that Mephibosheth was David's Rebbe. Tosfos says apparently this is the same one who was David's Rebbe, David had no choice but to hand them over. And Tosfos discusses that it's not now it's not Ish Boishes. It's not we know that Shaul had four regular sons from regular wives, not Pelagian. He had the three that were killed with him in battle at Haragabaya. Yeah? There was the fourth one, Ish Boishes, who was a king for a couple of years, and then he was assassinated by a couple of his servants at the beginning of Shmuel Beis. He was king at the same time. David was king in Hebron, and he was king over the rest of the Shevatim, ruling out of Machanayim and Eber Ayar. But at the beginning of David's reign. But anyway, so he was assassinated early on in David's reign. So therefore, obviously, that's not the one we're talking about over here. So therefore, so the Tosfos says, now how are you talking? I mean, it's his own Rebbe. How could he hand him over to be killed? So Tosfos says that apparently what happened was David davened on his behalf, just like the Gemara is going to say now that he davened on behalf of the other Mesiboshes, the first Tosfos, I remember. But the Loinena, apparently David was not answered, and this Mesiboshes' Rebbe was taken in. So that's as far as that. As far as the five sons of Michal, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, that actually Michal was never married to Adriel. Her older sister Merab was married to Adriel. Michal was married to David. What it was is that Sigmar discussed a couple of possibilities why it phrases it in the Pasuk this way. One answer is that where one thing the Gemara points out is it means that Merab had these children, but then she passed away and her sister Michal raised them, and therefore the Pasuk considers it as if she gave birth to them, because that's how it is. Kol ha'melamed es ben chaver ha'Torah, etc. Anyway, so those were the seven. So the Gemara says, Maishnohani, why dafka these seven? What they did is they took all the descendants of Shaul who were alive at the time, and they had them pass in front of the Oren. Kol she'Oren koltei, any one that the Oren grabbed him meant lemisa. It means that he's one of the ones marked for death. Kol she'ein Oren koltei, and anyone that the Oren did not grab, l'chayim, goes and then stays alive. So therefore, these seven were the ones who were grabbed by the Oren. Like they were fixed in place when they passed by the Oren, like they couldn't move. So Gemara says, "Mosiv Rav Chana Baktina." So Rav Chana Baktina says, "How could you say that they just did a test based on the Oren?" The pasuk continues, "Vayachmel Hamelach Al Mefiboshes Ben Yehonas and Ben Shaul." That the king had mercy on Mefiboshes, the son of Yehonas and Ben Shaul. So what do you mean? If it's the Oren catching them or not catching them, how is the king able to override that? The answer is Shaloi Heviva. The answer is David had Rachmanos that to begin with he didn't have this Mephibosheth. Again, this Mephibosheth being the nephew of the previous one that we talked about, the one who was a Mephibosheth who was grabbed, that we said was one of the seven, but now the Mephibosheth, the nephew, who was the son of Yehonasan. So the Pasuk goes on to say David had sworn many years ago to Yehonasan to never harm him or his descendants. So therefore, so that's why. So we're saying he had Rachmanos, he didn't have him walk in front of the Oren. Okay, but how can you show favoritism like that? It's dinin nefashis. You put everybody through. You have everybody walk through, and Hashem will decide who it is. How does David have the right to say you don't have to go? One second.
So Hashem picked everyone.
So Hashem picked. That's what we're saying. Well, yes. So rather, we can say David did have Mephibosheth walk in front of the Oren. Mephibosheth, the son of Yohanan, Ubikish Oliver Rachman, but then the Kolter, and the Oren actually grabbed him. He would have been one of the seven. Ubikish Oliver Rachman, but then David Davin on his behalf. Ukolter, and therefore the Oren let him go. So that's what it means that Ayach Malamel. But the Gemara says, "Vakati masiponim yesh b'daver." Still, how do you do favoritism like that? Once the Oren grabbed him, then that's it. How can David say? Instead, we're going to let you go, and we're going to take some other person and kill him instead of you. How does he have the right to do that? Ela shebikesh rachmim shaloyik l'tenu ha'oren. What it means is, when it says "Vayach malamela," David to begin with asked for special rachmim from Hashem that the Oren should not grab the Boshes. He had no choice. He has to have him walk through just like everybody else. No one person's life is worth more than another's. But he davened to begin with in the source of that his father, Yehonasan, was my friend that saved me, and that I swore to Yehonasan that I'm never going to harm him or his descendants. Hashem, please don't allow him to be grabbed. And sure enough, he wasn't.
So he had to abide by the oath.
So he had, right. So, but in other words, if the Oren had grabbed Mephibosheth, then he would have had no choice but to override that. On a pshat level, actually, on a pshat level, Mephoshim talk about over there, I think the Abavanel talks about over there, that maybe what it was is that Mephibosheth was a little kid at the time. Not only Mephibosheth was a little kid at the time, but Yehonasan, this whole thing, why was Noiv Irakonim wiped out, and why did this whole story happen? Because Shaul held it against David, that they'd helped him. Obviously, he says, the Abavanel says, Yehonasan wasn't involved in that, because he wouldn't have wanted them to wipe out Noiv Irakonim for helping David. On the contrary, he's David's friend. So therefore, that gives a reason why his descendants shouldn't be the ones to suffer this fate. Mashenka and the other sons of Dov Shaul didn't object, or maybe even they participated, and therefore they can be held to account for it.
It's interesting that this famine is happening, and the Givonim are the ones that hold the key to Hashem providing Parnassa.
Yeah.
And Hashem doesn't just like override that. So this is
Hold on.
Okay, I'm waiting. Yeah. Waiting
okay.
Waiting.
So the Gemara asks, "Va'aksiv lo yumsu oves abanim b'gamer." Doesn't the pasuk say that fathers shouldn't be killed because of their sons? And the pasuk continues, "Vice versa, ish v'cheter yumasu." Each person is killed for their own averus. So how can the sons of Shaul be killed because of something wrong that their father did? So Amar Abchiva Abba, Amar Abyechanan, Mutav Shite'oka, Ois Achas Menat Torah, better that even one letter of the Torah should be uprooted, in other words, that we're going to, for right now, ignore it, Vali Schal Hashem Shemayim Fahesya, rather than make a Chilul Hashem. Because the fact is, the Givonim had been treated badly, and since now it's wrong of them to be saying that we want lives in return for that, because again, what are they gaining from that? And it shows that they're Achazorim, and whatever, but nevertheless, there still was a Chilul Hashem, that they had been treated badly. So therefore, people are going to think, Rashi says, Goyim are going to think, why should any of us ever bother joining the Jewish people as Gerim? After all, look at that. They mistreated Gerim and nobody stood up on their behalf. So therefore, David is saying, in order to undo the Chilul Hashem that would be caused by that, we have no choice but to override the din of the Torah and punish the children on behalf of their fathers, on behalf of their father Shaul. Now, actually, Marsha points out, it's one thing as far as the five sons of Michal, we can say that the five sons of Michal, we said are really the five sons of Merab, whom Michal raised, we could say that maybe they were little, and we find that sometimes little kids are, punished for the so that's five of the seven. But the two sons of Ritzba Basaya, those are actually Shaul's sons. Necessarily, by now they're Golem again, because this is 30 odd years after Shaul was killed. So therefore, Marsha says, so particularly with them, how could we say that? Were it not for the fact that in this case, David decided, as a Haras Shah, we have to override what it says in the Pasuk. But therefore also, when we're going to talk about in a minute, the Gemara is going to say that Ritzba Basaya, their mother, was Machtik Alei Asadin. She accepted Hashem's judgment and didn't complain. Part of that is that not only she didn't complain, how you talking, my kids were killed, but even that she could have complained. At least they were adults. Why should Hashem hold them responsible for what happened many years ago? Why should Hashem be punishing them on behalf of Shaul, on what Shaul did wrong? But she didn't. She accepted Hashem's judgment without complaining. And that's a credit to her.
So five of them were the sons
of Merab, and the other two were grandchildren of Shaul, in other words, through his daughter Merab, and the other two were Shaul's sons through his Pelegish. Yeah.
And Mephibosheth, the Rebbe
of David. So Tosfos says that Mephibosheth, the Rebbe of David, was one of those two sons.
The other one
was called Armoni. Yeah. So Shaul to begin with had four sons from regular wives, and then he had at least these two sons from a Pelegish. We may have had more, we don't know. But of the four that he had from regular wives, three of them were killed in battle with him at Har HaGilboa, and one of them, Ishbosheth, was king for a couple of years and then was assassinated by a couple of his servants. So now at this point,
When did it become not right to have children from Pelegish?
From Pelegish? So the Rambam says that only a king is allowed to Pelegish. That's a discussion for another time. Onward. So the plot continues. So that's why, even though usually children are not punished for their father's averus, especially when they're older, but here it was an exception in order to undo the Chilul Hashem that had been created by the way the Givonim had been treated. So now the pasuk continues. Vatikach Rizpa bas Aya as a sack. The Rizpa bas Aya, the mother of two of these people who had been killed, took a sack. She leaned it against the rock. Mitchilas Kotzer, from the beginning of the harvest, the seven were hanged at the beginning of the harvest season. Rashi brings on the pasuk that it was Tetzayin Nissan, the first day Chol Hamoed Pesach. So from then, ad mitach mayim aleim in Shemayim, until water poured down on them from Shemayim, meaning until the Yemos HaGshamim, until the rainy season, which in Eretz Yisrael begins Cheshvan. So in other words, what happened was, now the bodies have been hanged over there. They're staying out there for several months, which the Gemara is going to ask in a second. You're usually not allowed to do that. So now she was concerned that the bodies are going to get attacked by wild animals or wild birds or birds of prey or whatever. What?
They're rotten by now.
No, but it takes time for them to rot. Meanwhile, wild animals. So what she did is she stayed over there protecting them. She stayed over there standing guard over them. When it says that she set up a sack, means like that was a lean-to for herself and maybe for the bodies as well to keep them, to preserve them against being devoured by wild animals or whatever. And she was there like that, staying for 7 months from Nisan until Cheshvan.
This is part of punishment why you didn't... had the fact because let Shaul's
right.
Not so here.
No, but that wasn't because they let Shaul's body. It was because they didn't make a hesped properly. So now, one second. So now the question is, and the pasuk continues, "V'le'nosna oifa shemayim l'nuach aleim yomim." She would not allow the birds of prey to rest on the bodies by day, v'chayas asod aloyla, or the wild animals to attack them by night. So she's partially staying as a one-woman guard, 24/7, over them for 7 months. So the question is, and in fact, Marsha brings from the Medrash that the word Hatsur over here doesn't just mean the rock as in where she was standing. It's also Hatsur as in Hatsur Tomim Paloi, that she recognized that Hashem is just, that Hashem is fair. Hashem has his reasons for doing things, and she didn't complain how you talking that my kids were killed. And that's what we're saying. She went on Mesiras Nefesh to preserve the bodies, yeah. So the question is, doesn't the pasuk say even when a person is hanged by Beis Din, when their body is hanged after skila, it says you're not allowed to leave the body hanging overnight. So how do they leave the bodies here hanging for 7 months? And the answer is, Amar Rav Yechon, Meshum Rav Shem Meni Yitzadak. Again, Mutav Shetarokar, Oysachas Ben HaTorah. David figured, in this case, it's better to override even one letter of the Torah, the Iskadish Shem Shemayim Fahesia. Not only do we want to take away the Chilul Hashem, as we said before, but we want to create a Kiddush Hashem, a public Kiddush Hashem. So you open Vashovim Vashovim opening. Now, during the next 7 months, when the bodies so Shahoy, you open Vashovim opening. Passers by would say, Makti Ben Shalelu. They would ask, what's going on? Why are these seven bodies hanging there? And people would tell them, Halolo Ben Emelachim hang. These are sons and grandsons of the previous king. And they would ask, Ma also, so what did they do wrong that they were hanged? And the answer would be, Poshtu Yadem, Begerim Gurim. They stretched out their hand and they attacked Gerim Grurim. Gerim means, of course, Gerim. Grurim literally means like dragged in, like people who are not even, so to speak, legitimate Gerim. They dragged themselves in to begin with and then tricked the Jewish people into accepting them as Gerim a couple of hundred years earlier. So now, because they attacked Gerim Grurim, is why now they were punished and now the family was punished and now then they're hanged. Omru, so the people, these goyim, would say, look at that, there's no nation in the world that it's worth joining like the Jewish people. Because they would say to themselves, listen, if even princes, people from the royal family, are being treated like that, in this nation, we can see, therefore, that commoners, how much more so, would know not to act like that because they're going to be punished. And umad gerim grurim kach, and madach, if they mistreat gerim grurim like that, Yisrael achas kama v'kama, how much more so if a yid mistreats another yid. So they would realize what a tremendous standard of morality there is among the Jewish people. You have to realize, by the way, in those days, you know, the Torah warns over and over again, don't harass a ger, don't remind him of his origins and whatever. One point is, you have to realize in those times, most people lived near their extended family. And the reason was, among other things, because their extended family has their back. That's the idea behind the Goyal Adam and other such things. If a person were to go, nowadays, you have a person, a person is finding it hard to live in one place. Okay, they pick up and move to another place. Okay, so I don't know a soul over there. Big deal. I'll make friends there soon enough. In the old days, it wasn't like that. If you didn't have your family with you and you don't know how to defend yourself or something, then you're a dead man. So like this, in the Goyish nations around there, it was an accepted thing. A ger, you mistreat a stranger. He's new in town. You can do whatever you want to him. There's nobody who's going to have his back. So now all of a sudden we're seeing that seven princes from Shaul's family were killed for mistreating Gadim Gurim. It made people realize this is a whole different kind of nation. This is a whole different kind of standard of morality than we're used to.
And then they didn't actually do anything to them.
And was saying that they only broke off their livelihood. Yeah. Miyad mitvas for Yisrael meyav hamishmela. So right away, 150,000 Gadim joined the Jewish people. Shanema, as we find in the, now, but earlier in the Masechta, we said they weren't supposed to accept Gerim in the times of David and Shlomo. So the answer would be that they were based in Shalad Yotis. But the dinim of people who maybe didn't know that particular halacha accepted such people as Gerim. But nevertheless, they still became Gerim, and b'dieved, their Gerim is valid.
We learn from these people not to accept Gerim.
We know not to accept Gerim, but nevertheless, okay. No, because if
you know their motive is pure.
Yeah, here we know their motive is pure because they're doing it because they realize how tremendous the Jewish people are. Yeah. Shenema, when we find the next generation, by Hila Shlomo Shivim Elef Noise Sabol, Shlomo had 70,000 porters carrying burdens when he was building the Besmikdash, Ushmoinim Elef Choitzebahar, and 80,000 workers quarrying and cutting stones in the mountains. So those are the same 150,000 who had become the Gerim in the previous generation. Or not even the previous generation, actually. This is the end of David's kingship. This is almost at the end of his 40, at the end of his 40 years. Shlomo started building this mikdash in the fourth year of his reign. So we're talking Sahakal 7 or 8 years later or something. So the Gemara says, how do you know? Maybe those 150,000 are born Jews. How do you know they were Gerim? The answer was Lois Dakodad. You can't think that. The Pasuk says that Shlomo did not make any of the born Jews into slaves. So if he's having people working for him as porters and quarriers and whatever, it has to be from David. So the Gemara says, why? But Dilma Dugzer Bahama, or Runger, there's different to your story, so we hear what the word is. But maybe just hired workers. How do you know that they're Gerim that actually joined the Jewish people? Elamehocha, rather, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim clarifies it. It says, Vayisko Shlomo Kol HaAnashim HaGerim Asher BeEretz Yisrael. Shlomo counted all the Gerim that were in Eretz Yisrael. Vayimotsu, when they found them, Meir Vachamishim Olaf, and he found there were 153,600. And then, Vayas Mehem, so he made of them, Shivim Elef Sabol Shmonim Elef Chotzebahar. 70,000 of them became into porters and 80,000 into quarriers. And then the apostle says the other 3,600 were four men who are supervising them and making sure the work is getting done correctly. The point is, in other words, we speak that there was a schos. That's the point. In other words, we're saying that, but still, Doug Shlomo didn't feel it's right to make born Jews labor in this. They can be doing other jobs for the Bismarckers. They can be doing things that don't necessarily involve such heavy physical labor. So therefore, we see clearly from that pasuk that the 70,000 and the 80,000 were from among the Gerim. So that's what we're saying, that 150,000 Gerim joined the Jewish people. And when did they join? Was as a result of the story that we just said.
Was it really hard because it said it was silent making the base of
Mekhah? No, it was silent in that they didn't cut the stones on site. They cut them off site. They caught them off site. Yeah, but they cut them off site. There still wasn't a stone. Yeah. Okay, there was still a lot of heavy labor involved. Okay, so that's the story. By the way, afterwards, the Pasuk said, the Gemara doesn't continue with the story, but afterwards, the Pasuk says that eventually David gathered up the bones of these, the bodies of these seven people, as well as then at that point, he took the bodies of Shaul and his sons who had been buried in Yavish Gilad 30 years ago, and he had them buried properly in their place in Eretz Yisrael in Givas Shaul. Which means, in other words, that, so the vote was that now David realized that, you know what, there is something we can do. We don't do that. At least at the top of the Amud, David said, you know what, it's more than 12 months since Shaul passed away. It's not really the covered to make a hesped. But now that he had, now he actually went ahead and did that and actually made a friend, actually gave Shaul the proper cover that he was supposed to.
Is there any way what happened to this Rav and stuff after this whole thing?
So what happened to what?
The rub and the
afterwards the pasuk says, "Vayi also Hashem la'aret." The pasuk then continues that Hashem listened to the tefillos of the land, and then it started raining. In fact, we said ad mikach aleim mayim nashamayim. We said that Ritzpah Vasaya was sitting over there guarding them until water fell from the heavens, which means the following winter when it started raining.
And then she left.
That's it. Then they gathered up the bodies and buried them. Now she doesn't need to be there anymore.
And they left them there because...
That's what we're saying. They left them there in order to make a Kiddush Hashem. So everybody should realize how people who mistreat Gerim...
What was the
We said for 7 months. For 7 months, from Nissan until Cheshvan. Well, that's according to Rashi on the pasuk. Actually, the Abavanel on the pasuk says maybe not necessarily. And maybe what happened was that year, because there had been a drought and there hadn't been rain, therefore exceptionally Hashem made it rain that summer. So maybe you could say that Nissan or whatever. So you could say that maybe it wasn't really that long. But yeah. Anyway.
So that means the Abishter was.
So it means the Abishter was looking out for the, yeah, the Abishter agreed. That's what we're saying, yeah. Because in other words, what it is B'derech Shadim Roitz Aleilach B'Melishvinoise. Hashem makes a person go in the way they want. Since the Givonim are demanding this cool thing, then Hashem is sticking up on their behalf and saying, fine, if that's what they want, then that's what needs to be done. They should have had more rachmanus and said, we're willing to accept some other thing instead. That's what we're saying. David went around individually to each one of them to try and talk them out of it and not want them.
Money.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So the Gemara asks, when the sinim David gozer aleihem, you're telling me that David made a gzeira on the sinim? Moshe gozer aleihem. We find that Moshe long ago had made a gzeira on them. We find at the beginning of Parashas Nitzavim that Moshe is talking about that all you Jewish people are collected together, and he mentions individually the Choit Ve'etim V'Shoyevim Mayim. That means they're not part of the regular Jewish people. They're not part of regular Geirim either, because he mentions Geirach Hashem V'Sharecha separately in the Pasuk as well. Rather, these are Avodim. Whose job was Choit Ve'etim V'Shoyevim Mayim. And the Givonim are also the same thing. So we see that Moshe already made a Zerah. They're not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Rashi on the Pasuk actually says that the same way as the Givonim, the main body of the Givonim came in Yeshua's time, there was a smaller number of them that came in Moshe's time and pulled the same trick, and they also got accepted as Choit Ve'etim V'Shoyevim Mayim. So Moshe made the Zerah. The answer is Moshe Gozolau Hudorah. Moshe's Gzera is only for that generation. David goes to the Chole daughter, whereas David made the Gzera for all generations. So now, here's where Tosfos discusses, here and also in Ksubas, Tosfos discusses a few possibilities. Now Rashi at the beginning of the Sugya explained that this whole thing that we're saying, that we're talking about the Gzera of marriage. In other words, Daraisa, it would have been allowed to marry the Messinim, but Dirabbanon, first Moshe, and then we're saying, then Yeshua, then David, were Gozer not to. However, Tosfos asks on that from certain other places, including a Mishnah in Ksubas, that seems to imply that there's a that seems to imply that they're not actually considered avodim per se. And anyway, we learned a couple of blocks ago that we said that there is an isur chasnus on them even after they become gerim, and then they're from the seven nations of Canaan. So Tosfos discusses a few possibilities. Maybe what it is when we're talking over here about that Moshe made the gzeira and then Yeshua and then David means the gzeira that they're going to be avodim. The fact that they're going to be considered avodim to a certain extent, maybe not like full-fledged avodim, therefore the dinim in Ksubas don't apply to them as they would apply to a shiva, the dinim apply differently to a shiva than to them, but nevertheless avodim in the sense that therefore, that because of that they're barred from the Jewish people. But the issue of marrying them, Tosfos learns, would have actually been Daraisa because they're from the seven nations of Canaan.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Vakati Yeshua gozer alayu. Still, what does David have left to do? Yeshua already made a gzeira on them. Dichtiv vayitnem Yeshua vayomer hu choit ve'etzim b'shevim mayim. Yeshua made them on that day, the Givonim. He made them choit ve'etzim b'shevim mayim la'eda for the congregation and the Jewish people. Ulam mizbach Hashem for the mizbeach of Hashem. So they're already from Yeshua's times. They have the status. The answer is Yeshua gozer b'smach b'smitzvah kayim. Yeshua's gzeira was meant to expire when the b'smitzvah is destroyed. Only as long as the b'smitzvah is standing will there be a gzeira. David gozer b'smach ein b'smitzvah kayim. David added because he saw that they have these bad midos that it should continue even after the b'smitzvah is destroyed. And we see that Yeshua's gzeira was only when there's a b'smitzvah because it says when mizbach Hashem. So only as long as there's a mizbeach. So the Gemara says b'mei Rebbe bikshu lahatir misinim. In Rebbe's times, they were thinking to be matur the Nesinim. Now, according to Rashi, that would mean, since Rashi learns that the whole issue on marrying them is only drabbanon, from Moshe and later on Yeshua and so forth, so a later Beis Din could overturn it. Usually the rule is that a Beis Din cannot overturn a previous one unless the greater Chachmah minyan. But one point is that maybe in Rebbe's times, he saw they don't have this bad midah anymore. Maybe the whole reason for the Gzeira was because of their bad midahs, and now he saw. However, Tosfos, who holds that the Issur on them to begin with is Daraisa, he says that can't possibly mean that, because obviously Rebbe can't think, they can't think in Rebbe's times of being matu and Issur Daraisa. Rather, Tosfos says the status of them as Avodim, they thought to cancel, because look, in Rebbe's times, this message has already been destroyed for 100 odd years, so therefore we don't need to have them have the status of Avodim. But Omer Lahem Rebbe, Rebbe says we can't do that. So Kenu Natu. Sure, we can be Matir or Chalik because based in because Hefker based in Hefker. They have the ability to be Mafkir, so fine. They were considered Avodim now. They're not going to be considered Avodim anymore. Chalik Mizbeach Miyatir, but who has the right to be Matir, the portion that belongs to the Mizbeach? There's no Mizbeach nowadays, but nevertheless, when the Mizbeach is rebuilt, then there's going to be. So therefore we can't be Matir then, says Rebbe.
At all. So
Sancheirov mixed everybody up. But the Nisinim still stayed together with the Jewish people because, after all, they were still serving the Beis Hamikdash at the time. So when Yehuda and Binyamin went into Golos and the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the Nisinim went with them. And when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, the Pesukim describe in Ezra and Nehemiah that continued them. The Nisinim also came back and resume their job working for the Beis Hamikdash.
They lost touch with them in Babylonia?
No, so that's apparently not. Apparently they kept it.
They stayed with us in
Babylon, yeah. In fact, there's Gemara in Kiddushin that mentions that there was an entire city over there that was composed of Divinim, yeah.
Oh, is that
Perek Dalet? In Perek Dalet, yeah.
Why would they want to be?
Because after all, this was their hereditary job, and especially, like you said, Marshall says before, they knew there's a schus in it, so they wanted to keep that, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, now this that Rebbe is saying we can't be matter than a sinim because of Chelik Mizbeach, that disagrees with what Rebbe Ba'ab says. The portion of the fact that the sinim are also because they're supposed to be, remember, Yeshua had said that they're going to be slaves, la'eda ulamizbach Hashem. So there's two components. Number one, they're slaves to the Jewish people collectively, and number two, to Mizbach Hashem. So Rabbi Ba'aba says, Chelak Eda La'olam Asur, the part that they're also because they're slaves of the Eda, that's always also unless a based in his matter. But Chelak Mizbeach, Bizman Shabbos Mekesh Chaim Asur, Ein Bizman Mekesh Chaim Shari, but he learned that part of the Chelak Mizbeach expires once the Bizman Mekesh was destroyed, so that disagrees. We said, Rebbe had said, how can we be matter the Chelak Mizbeach, even though there's no Mizbeach nowadays, that Chelak still exists, and we have no right to be matter it, whereas Rabbi Ba'aba is saying that we could do that. So according to the Priva Abba, if a Beistin at some generation were to come together and decide we want to be Matur, then a Sinim, we want to be Matur, Chelik Eda, then we would be allowed to do that, and it would be Mutur until Mashiach comes and the Beis Mikdash is rebuilt. Because then you have Chelik Mizbeach again.
So that Shevet, I think it was a God or one of the Shvatim who sinned and no one was going to marry them. And they got
that was Shevet Binyamin, that was Kolag Shpagina, but then they were Matur.
They got so small that they were just... So what's with this Gavain? If you weren't allowed to marry them, why didn't the Gavain disappear?
Because apparently they were large enough. Nobody ever except for was saying that they lost their livelihood when Mishkan Noi was destroyed. But there was no civil war against. No, they could marry among each other. They could marry Gator. They could marry Gator and Diotis from other nations. When we just said that 150,000 converted, then some of them could have married Gavain.
Yeah, but somehow they would disappear.
Yeah, no. Okay. Mishnah says, now we're finally getting back to matters of Yibum and Chalitza after having digressed from them for the last 20 years or so. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Amr of Yeshua, Shamaiti Shasoris Chotzen B'Chotzen L'Ishtoi, I have heard from my Rebbeim that a Soris, which is somebody who's unable to father children, is able to do Chalitza, and they can do Chalitza for his wife. One second. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, I also heard from my Rebbeim that a Soris cannot do Chalitza, and they cannot do Chalitza for his wife, or they don't need to do Chalitza for his wife. The Emri Lefarish, I can't explain what kind of Soris is which. Omer Rabbi Akiva, Ani Afarish. So Rabbi Akiva says, let me explain it. Swiss Adam, now you can have a Swiss Adam, meaning that a person was born normal, and then afterwards he was made sterile. They cut away his beitzim or the chutei beitzim or whatever. In Goyish societies, it was more common in the old days. For example, you have eunuchs. You have people that were serving kings. In particular, for example, when you have Nicholas Esther, when you have Hegai Swiss Amalek, Shashgai Swiss Amalek, these were people in charge of the women's quarters. So therefore, they would castrate them so that they don't have any ideas about getting involved with the women.
So such a
person is called a Swiss Adam. So Rabbi Akiva says, what you learned from your Rebbeim is like this. A Swiss Adam, he can do Chalitza if one of his brothers dies, or they can do Chalitza for his wife, because originally, during his lifetime, there was a time when he was fertile. The fact that afterwards he was castrated, that doesn't change things. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says, Swiss Chama, Loi Cholitz, Loi Cholitz and Eishkai, but a Swiss Chama, meaning that he was born already infertile, Chama, literally Swiss Chama means a Swiss of the sun. So it means, in other words, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, it means, in other words, in effect, that as soon as he came out into the world, the first time he saw the sun, he already had this condition. So him, Loi Cholitz, Loi Cholitz and Eishkai, he cannot do a valid chalitza, and they don't have to do chalitza to his wife, because there was never a time in his life when he had the ability to father children. And the whole, one second, the whole point of chalitza is instead of Yibum, and Yibum, the purpose is that Loi Yimocha Shmoy Yisrael, so a Swiss Chama is already Shmoy Mochui, because his name is already erased, because he can't have children, and he can't possibly, he's allowed to get married, fine, because the wife is not with Sylvan period, yeah? So it would mean that he's able to have relations. He's able to have relations. Maybe they're just he's not able to produce zera. He's not able to produce children. We're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow the simonim of him. One possibility, it seems from the simonim that we're going to say, it might be that we're talking about a condition of low testosterone, for example. He doesn't have enough male hormones, and therefore his body doesn't develop normally. The Gemara is going to say soon that there is a refuah to him. In other words, there is a way to give him that. With that said, there is also a condition. There's a condition that they have. That's described in the medicalese, they call it Klinefelter's syndrome. Like this, normally a person has 46 chromosomes in every cell of their body, and two of those are for a man, or an X and a Y. Sometimes you have a man has an extra Y. And they call it Klinefelter's syndrome, and among other things, such a man is infertile. Some of the simonim that the Gemara describes suggests that kind of thing, but the Gemara is including several different, what would nowadays be considered several different conditions under one heading of Swiss Chama. Anyway, so Rabbi Akiva says that time loichotz mishnei. Rabbi Eliezer omer loiki. Rabbi Eliezer says no, that's not what it means. The other way around, el a swiss chama cholitz vachotz mishnei. A swiss chama can do chalitza, and they can do chalitza for his wife. Mipnei she yesh lo refuah. Because there is a way of healing him. Again, if we're talking about something of low testosterone, the stamina, they can give him some extra hormones, and that'll help him. Swiss Adam, like Cholitz, like Cholitz and Ishtar, but a Swiss Adam, not, but they shame later for, because no healing him. Once they remove the relevant parts, and there's no putting them back. So the Gemara says, Hey, Rabbi Shurban Besera, and Rabbi Shurban Besera gave Eidos in front of the Chachamim, Al Ben Megusas, Shahoy Yerushalayim, about a man named Ben Megusas, who lived in Yerushalayim before the Churban. Swiss Adam, so he was a Swiss Adam, he had such an operation done to him, the Yibmus Ishtoi, and then when he passed away without children, because he couldn't have children, obviously, then they did Yibum for his wife, Lakayim, Divrei Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shurban, Beseira is saying that to support what Rabbi Akiva is saying, that yes, since he's a Swiss Adam, but because he had Shasa Kosher, because it was a time in his life when he was able to father children, when he would have been able to father children, then therefore, even now that he can't, then nevertheless, Chalitza still, and Yibum still apply to his wife. Whereas, according to Rabbi Yibum, we just said you could. In fact, the Gemara is going to discuss that, but we see Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer had only talked about Chalitza. But the Gemara is going to explain that Rabbi Akiva would hold that even you could do Yibum with his wife.
You know, he can't build a family.
He can't produce a family, but nevertheless, since he died childless and he had a shkasa kosher, Rabbi Akiva says that's reason enough that you can say that Yibum applies to his wife. So now his brother, who is not a Swiss Adam, will hopefully be able to have children with her, and that way it'll perpetuate his name.
Oh, so brother. Okay, I thought we were talking about the...
No, no, we're not talking about Ben Megusas himself doing Yibum for his wife's brother, for his brother's wife. We're talking about Ben Megusas died, and one of his brothers did Yibum for his wife. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara continues. So the Mishnah continues. Hasaris lecholitz v'leminamim. Now we said a saris of one kind or another can't do chalitz or yibum. We have the machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, which kind of saris. L'chein ailonis lecholitz v'leminis yabemis. Similarly, and this we've learned earlier in the Masechta, an ailonis, which is a parallel case with a woman who's infertile, and again we're going to learn the simonim for tomorrow. Also, she doesn't need to do chalitza, and she cannot do yibum. Because again, she can't have children, and then the pasuk is implying that she has to have children, that she has to be able to have children. The Mishnah continues, Asoris shecholat levivdoi. So now, if a soris, whatever kind of soris it is that's possible, if he does chalitza for his yivama, loipsala, he doesn't passel her from marrying the kohen that way, because it's not considered a valid chalitza. So in other words, if you had two brothers, Reuben and Shimon, so Reuben dies, Shimon is a soris, of whichever kind the soris can't do chalitza, a Swiss chama according to Rabbi Akiva, which the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. So Shimon is a Swiss chama. So let's say he does chalitza to her. Nothing happens. It's not a valid chalitza. Now, if Shimon dies, then she can marry a kohen. There's no other brother for her to have to worry about. And she's an almana is allowed to marry a kohen. Had she been a chalutza, then she'd be possible to marry a kohen. ba'ola. But on the other hand, if he has relations with her, psala, then he makes her posel, because there, since he's not supposed to be doing with, doing yibum with her, then it's eshes och, it's his brother's wife, which is an eruv tam. Because this is the bi'ila of znus, because if no yibum is possible, then it means that it's an iser to, yeah. The same way if the wife was an Ilonis and one of the brothers did chalitza to her, nothing changes, so she's still mutter to a koyin. But if they have relations with her, then they passel her. It's the same thing. Have any of them having relations with her would be znus. Because again, she's their brother's wife and there's no mitzvah of yibum, and therefore there's the issue of error. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Mechti. Now let's consider what Rabbi Akiva is saying in our Mishnah. He's saying that a Swiss, in particular, he's saying that a Swiss Adam, he's a person who was operated on and became infertile because of that, cholitz v'choltzim l'ishtar. Now, the problem is that would make him a krusrofa or a psuadaka as with a Udi or the Peret, and he's not allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael. So Mechti, let's consider. Shaminim Rav Akiva, we know that Rav Akiva holds the Omer Chayve Lavin Chayve Krisistomu. We know that Rav Akiva holds that the Chayve Lavin are the same as the Chayve Krisus in the sense that a Mamzer can be produced from both of them. That if the same way as we've been saying throughout Masechta, that for example, a person has relations with an Eishes Ish or with a close relative or whatever, the child is a Mamzer, we've learned earlier in the Masechta that Rav Akiva holds the same thing if there's an Isur Lav. Now, a Swiss Adam is an Isur Lav. Because after all, the pasuk says, "Well, yovit psuadaka or krusrafa," and a Swiss other, by definition, is psuadaka. So then, a v'chayvik krisus lav v'nei chalitza v'yibum minu. Now we know that by chayvik krisus, there's no chalitza and yibum, as we learned back at the beginning of the Masechta, chamesh esrei noshim poitras sodesehen. That, for example, if Reuven is married to Shimon's daughter, then Reuven dies, and Shimon doesn't have to do chalitza or yibum. He can't do yibum with his own daughter, and he doesn't have to do chalitza with her either. So therefore, now Rabbi Akiva, now that's an Isur Karis. Rabbi Akiva holds that just like Kiddushin are not toifas by Chayvi Krisis, they're not toifas by Chayvi Lavan either. So according to him, why is Chalitza necessary in the case of a Swiss Adam? We should say the same thing. We should say the same thing as there's no Chalitza for Chayvi Krisis, the same way you should say there's no Chalitza for Chayvi Lavan. Why are we saying that chalitza has to be done to his wife? That Swiss Adam, he says, cholitz v'cholitz in the ishtoi. Why? It should be considered like chayvei krisus. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Ami, chachav ma'eskinin, gunshin nasa ochav giyoris. We're talking about over here where his brother was married to a giyoris. Now, a psuadaka, can a psuadaka marry a giyoris? Well, we learned the other day about this machloikis. We talked about the other day that there's machlokas. Do we consider gerim to be part of Kahal Hashem? When the pasuk says lo yovet tzvadaka, the Kahal Hashem, does Kahal Hashem include gerim? Reb Yosi holds that it does not. So therefore, mamzer or tzvadaka or whatever would be allowed to marry a geyoris. So there you go. So Reuven was married to a geyoris. He died. Now his brother Shimon is a Swiss on them. You're right. Had he been married to a Bas Yisrael, then according to Rabbi Akiva, no chalitza would be necessary because there's an Isur Lav. But because the wife is a Geyoris, therefore the Swiss Adam is perfectly allowed to marry her, and therefore he has to do chalitza. Therefore, if he doesn't want to marry her, then he has to do chalitza. So the Gemara says, Yehochi Yabumi Nami Miyabim. Well, then why are we talking specifically about Chalitza? According to that, the Swiss Adam could also do Yivum with her if he wants. Because after all, again, he being a Tzuadaka, she being a Viotis, they're allowed to get married. Fine, it's not going to do any good as far as having kids, but nevertheless, they should still be allowed. And the Gemara says, Enoch Nami. As a matter of fact, you're right, they could. But Aidi, the Omer of Yeshua Chalitz, Omer Iyu Nami Chalitz. Because of Yeshua, quoted his Rebbeim as saying that a Swiss cholitz v'cholitz in the ishtoi, and another Swiss ain cholitz v'ain cholitz in the ishtoi, therefore Rabbi Akiva continues talking about chalitza, but in fact Rabbi Akiva would hold that they could do yibum if they wanted to as well, in this case. And the Gemara says, dekanami. In fact, you can see that from the wording of the Mishnah, the Katani, because after all, the Mishnah said, heyed Rabbi Yeshua ben Beseira, al ben magus ashroi v'yishlaim Swiss Adam, that we had this case of a Swiss Adam who lived in Yerushalayim, v'yibmu as ishtoi, and they did yibum with his wife, l'kayim divrei Rabbi Akiva, which supports what Rabbi Akiva says. Shmamina. So therefore, that proves that in fact, Rabbi Akiva would hold that they could even do Yibum. Because that's what Rabbi Shimon ben Seira is saying, that they actually did. It was a case where they actually, based in Yerushalayim before the Churban, actually did allow them to do Yibum.
We don't know anywhere that you can only do Yibum where it's shy to have children.
No, so the purpose of Yibum is to have children. Now we're saying, as long as there's no Isser, as long as there's no Isser of him marrying her, we're in this case, she being a Giyotis and he being a Tzurdaka, there's no Isser, according to Rabbi Yossi, then fine, they can do Yibum even if they want, and that's what Rabbi Akiva holds, and that's what Rabbi Yeshua and Ben Seder is saying, that in fact, we know of one time that they did that. Well, I was just right. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, continuing that discussion of what Rabbi Akiva holds in our Mishnah, and we'll talk about what the actual synonym of a Swiss order, of a Swiss Chama, and of an Ivonis are. So we'll continue that tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
It has to be different.
Okay, everyone.